Good morning. This class, or the topic of this class, was born out of a comment that I made when we started our Parsha class. We started the Parsha class somewhere by Yeshev or Miketz, I don't remember exactly. But at the time, I made a half aside comment that there are parallels between the story of Yosef and Megillat Esther. So I also said that maybe I'll give a class about it. And since the sister had already scheduled this Esther class, and I was thinking about what to talk about, there you go. That's the genesis behind this. No pun intended on the book of Bereshis. But that is where we're at. So the topic is the inspiration of Esther from the Yosef story. And the reason why I said to get a Chumash is because I'm going to be jumping back and forth as the book of Esther, like all the Megillas, is in the back of the art scroll Chumash. I didn't get all the page numbers. 1252. Okay, so I'm just going to put the page marker there on 1252, and we're going to be going back and forth. So now the big question that we're going to be addressing is why all the parallels. But before we get to the answer of why all the parallels, we have to set the stage for actually seeing all of the parallels. So what I did in the chart, which I gave you here, and some of this information appears in a very nice summary in the introduction to Megillas Esther in the Da'as Mikra book of Chamesh Megillot. That's the edition that was put out by the Mossad Rav Kook publication. So in their introduction, they note some of these, but they don't go into detail as to the why. I mean, they have a theory, and the theory I actually gave you at the top of the back of the page, that the author of the Megillah is emphasizing that the story of the Megillah is not a one-time event, but it is part of a series of historical cycles of events, and the hand of the Almighty is surely present. Okay, so that's our conclusion. If you wanted to get their answer, you can leave now. That's all that they say on it, at least in the introduction. But the truth is that the parallels are a lot deeper than just looking at, oh, this is a nice little thing which is similar, because it goes much deeper than particular details of a story. It goes into the point where, as you're reading the Megillah, if you're familiar with the story of Yosef, and by the story of Yosef, I mean from when Yosef appears on the scene in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, through the end of the book of Bereshis. Okay, the story of Yosef spans from the time that he appears as a teenager telling stories about his brothers and having dreams, and dreaming of ruling, to the end of his life. And what is going to become evidently clear is that the authors of the Megillah were clearly utilizing that story, among other stories. By the way, if you go back to that same introduction in the Da'as Mikra, Megillas Esther, they will point out other parallels between Esther and Daniel, between Esther and Ezra and Nehemiah, between Esther and other stories, which is too much for today. We're not going to be able to get to that. But this story in particular, we're going to spend a lot of time with. Okay, so before we actually start jumping around pages, we're going to look at the top part of this chart, and the truth is that these are thematic motifs which are similar, not necessarily with exact replicas of language. We're going to look at the replicas of language, or at least some of the replicas of language, on the bottom half of the page. But when it comes to comparing, for example, beauty and smarts, which is a rise to power. So we're familiar with Yosef. Yosef, in the annals of his father's household, the Torah describes Yosef as being a Yefei Toar, Yefei Mar'eh, and Yosef becomes the beloved one of his father. Now that has to do with, of course, his being the son of Rachel. How is Rachel described in the Torah when she first appears on the scene? Vayhi Rachel, Veinei Leah Rakos, Leah's eyes were soft, or however you want to translate that word. Rachel, I saw, Yifas Toar, Yifas Mareh, also very beautiful. How is Esther described when she comes into the scene? Same thing. Esther is described, right, Nasa'achim Be'enav, I'm sorry, before that she even appears in front of Ahasuerus, the Megillah describes, V'hanara Yifas Toar, V'tovas Mareh. Okay? That she's exactly, it's the same language which is used. This idea of long forgotten. Remember that Yosef, of course, before he becomes second to the king in Egypt, Yosef is languishing in prison for a number of years. And the last thing that we know of Yosef doing before he appears before Paro is that he interpreted the dreams of the Sara Mashkim and the Sara Ofim, the chief butler, the chief baker, however you like to translate Sara Mashkim. He's the wine pourer guy. And cup holder. Well, Mashkim literally means
drink, drink.
Right. I call him the wine pourer, but the musical called him the butler, so we'll go with that. Anyway, so Yosef interprets his dream, and he says to him, remember me to Paro. And how long does it take before he remembers him to Paro? 2 years. Because the next pasuk is Vayhi Mikesh Nasayim Yamim. After 2 more years, that's when Paro has his dreams, and he's reminded there's a fellow in jail who can interpret dreams. We know that Mordechai is able to achieve what he achieves on the grand stage because Achashverosh is reminded of Mordechai having saved his life. When does Mordechai save Achashverosh's life? In the 7th year of Achashverosh's reign. When does Haman rise to power? In the 12th year of Achashverosh's reign. So we're dealing with a period of 5 years in which the king clearly forgot about Mordechai. And we know that he forgot about Mordechai because when it is read to him that Mordechai saved his life, he asks, what has happened? What has been done for this fella? And the answer is, Ephes, nada, nothing. So clearly there's an episode which has been long forgotten. How do things change? How do things turn? What is the turning point in the story of Yosef in terms of his rising to power and in the story of the Jewish people in terms of their going from what looks like the darkest place to a place of hope is sleep, or in the case of Achashverosh, lack thereof. In Paro's case, Paro slept, and after he woke up after his first dream, Torah says, Vayishan, that he fell back asleep. So he sleeps twice, has 2 dreams. Achashverosh couldn't sleep. And we know on account of his being unable to sleep, he has read the story of Mordechai having saved his life, and Haman comes crashing in, literally, crashing in, and Achashverosh asks him, oh, what do you recommend I do to the person that I would like to honor? Another turning point is that an important officer is hanged, which of course becomes a memorable point which allows for this transition. Remember, for the Sar HaMashkim, the one who was given his job back, would it have been as memorable if there wasn't a point of comparison? Oh, I had a dream. I was going to give my job. I was going to get my job back. And then some guy comes along and says, oh yeah, you're going to get your job back. Shkayich, I could have figured that one out. But there's another guy who has a similar dream and gets a very different interpretation. And his interpretation is proven to be true. And he dies. and I did not. I'm going to remember that because that's traumatic. Look at what could have happened to me, and it didn't happen to me. So that's number one. And now in the parallel side with Esther, Haman's death, he was an important officer. From as far as we can see, he is the king's best buddy. From everything, they drink together, they celebrate together. The king offers, Haman offers the king money, and the king says, "Akesef Nesula, I don't need your money, it's all good. You can do whatever you want to those people that you're describing." And yet a few days later, after he writes his decree, Haman's dead. As a matter of fact, they might in both cases be a three-day period. With Esther, it's a little confusing. It might be 4 days later that Haman is hanged. So there's that parallel. Now that is less of a Megillah motif as much as that's just the chronology of what happens in terms of these events and the hanging. Meal brings a revelation. Now that's the way the Das Mikra puts it. I don't know if it's exactly a meal brings a revelation, because while Yosef does have a meal with his brothers and the Egyptians, that is earlier than Yosef's revelation. In other words, they sit down at one point, and then it's really only after they have left and been caught with the cup that was planted and brought back, and Yehuda gives his impassionate speech to Yosef, that Yosef finally reveals himself. So they're not exactly in a meal. But the point that the Das Mikra makes is that at the end of all of that, because they did eat together when Binyamin came down, and it was during that same trip, it's after all that that this revelation takes place. And what's the revelation? That I, the king, who you did not know who I really am really Yosef, your brother. Okay, that's one. And in Esther's case, Esther has a meal. She's the queen, and she's with her husband, the king, and she's with her husband's best buddy, and she reveals that I'm not the lady who you thought. I mean, I am the queen, and I am your wife, and all that, but I'm also a Yehudiyah, and I'm also technically subject to the decree of this guy here who you are supporting, and that is a problem. And that's with the three parties meaning three parties in the particular meal that we're talking about. In the case of in Yosef's story, it's Yosef, the Egyptians, and the brothers. The Egyptians don't need the information, and it's between Yosef and his brothers. Esther, Haman, and Achashverosh. It's not that Haman needs the information. Achashverosh needs the information, and it's, of course, more a revelation to him than to Haman. We can imagine what Haman's reaction to all this would be. Oh, queen, of course, you're not part of this. We're talking about everybody else. You're a good Jew. It's all the other ones, right? And finally, sold as slaves. So, and we're going to focus on this at the end. You'll see that the very last line on the page is Nimkarnu. We're going to get back to that. But sold as slaves, Yosef, of course, was sold. And one of the points that Esther makes to Achashverosh is, if we'd only been sold. I want to take a look at that for a moment, because we're going to get back to it. It's on page 1258, or Perek Zayin, chapter 7, verse 4. Okay, so it's on 1258, about halfway down, right before that little space in the middle of the page. Okay, so we're going to go back to Psukim, actually. The king is now, so just a quick reminder of the story, after the decree that was made, and Mordechai gives Esther the charge to go to Achashverosh, and to ask him to annul the decree, Esther comes up with her own strategy of what she's going to do. She comes into Achashverosh, and she says to him, Achashverosh, I want to invite you and Haman to a party that I'm going to be holding today. And that's the problem with the timeline, by the way, because Esther told Mordechai that she was going to fast for 3 days, and then she's going to come to the king. And the Megillah says that Yom HaShalishi, that it was on the third day that she came in. That's why I am a little confused, because I don't know, is Esther still fasting at that first party? Because she invites Haman and Achashverosh to a party today, and then at that party she invites them to another party tomorrow, another Mishteh. So this is at the second party, and the king, and this is after the horse episode where Haman has walked Mordechai through town, and the king again says to Esther, as he did at the first party the previous day, what would you like? Ad chatzia malchus v'se'as, until half the kingdom and it's yours, and it will be done. So Pasuk Gimel, Matan Esther HaMalkava Tomar, Esther the queen responds, and she says, Imatzasi chen be'enecha ha-melech, if I have found favor in your eyes, v'im al ha-melech tov, and if it's good for the king, Tinasein li nafshi b'she'ilasi, v'yami b'vakashasi, please give me my soul, that's what I'm asking for, and my nation in my request. Okay? Makes sense, right? Because Haman's decree is that we're going to kill all the men, women, and children. That's all the Yehudim. And then it says, Ki nimkarnu ani v'ami lahashmida la'arog l'abed. We have been sold, I and my nation, to be destroyed and killed and annihilated. V'ilu la'avadim v'lishfachos nimkarnu hecharashti ki ein hatzar shoveh b'nezek ha-melech. Had we only been sold into slaves and maids, I would have been quiet. Ki ein hatzar shoveh b'nezek ha-melech, for the adversary is not worthy of the king's damage. Okay? Now, what is she talking about? What is she talking about? So this goes into a different perspective on the Megillah, which is a totally different class, but I'll just give it to you in less than 2 minutes. And that is the question as to, was Achashverosh aware of the extent of Haman's decree? Because if you go back, and this is really not our topic, but if you go back to chapter 3, when he tells Achashverosh that I'm going to give you 10,000 silver pieces, it's chapter 3, Pasuk 9. Okay, so Paragimel Pasuk Test, page 1255, basically just above, smack in the middle, where Haman says to Achashverosh, Im al ha-melech tov yikasev li'abadam, after describing these people who don't follow the laws and they do things differently, if it's good in the eyes of the king, or if it's good with the king, write le'abadam. Okay, we're going to get back to that word in a second. And I'm going to give 10,000 silver talents, which is a heck of a lot of money, to the king, And the king, as I said before, says, you can keep the money, forget about it. But that's what Haman says. He goes, save le'abadam, one word. Now, what le'abadam means is a good question. It's subject for debate. Now, le'abadam, as we know, could mean to destroy, but le'abadam could also be uva'u ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur. What does that mean? Uva'u ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur v'anidachim eretz Mitzrayim v'shtachim l'Hashem. That those who are ovdim in the land of Ashur and those who are nidach in the land of Egypt. Ovdim means wanderers. Okay? And it could be that what Haman was saying to the Achashverosh is, expel them. Hasn't that happened everywhere where the Jews have lived? In the history of the world? Okay, you can say labadam. So, and what he ends up writing is, go down a few lines, Pasuk Gimel, verse 13 in chapter 3, okay, now that's not what the king agreed to. This is genocide. Le'abadam might not mean genocide. It could mean not genocide. It could mean expulsion. And the reason for offering money is because you're going to lose the taxes of all the people who are going to be thrown out. So I'll pay the difference. What's Esther saying to the king? Had we only been sold, then we'd at least be here. And you might benefit from the slave labor, but killing, that's ridiculous. And who does that benefit? Benefits nobody. You get nothing. I mean, maybe she wouldn't have known about the offer that Achashverosh had rejected. But anyway, that is something to bear in mind as well. So what's Esther talking about? She's saying, are you aware of the details of this decree? And maybe Achashverosh is not, because he even says, what are you talking about? And Esther points to Haman and says, he's the guilty party, and this is all on his head. He's the one who has suggested and even made a decree that we should all be killed. Okay, so the reason I went into all that is because I wanted to explain what in the Megillah, if we'd only been sold, what Esther was talking about. Because if you recall, and this is not very, it's not a very difficult leap to follow. Yosef was sold into slavery, but how long was he a slave? How long was he imprisoned? I don't know how long he was a slave to Potiphar and how long he was imprisoned in terms of the breakdown of those years. I do know that from the time that he appears at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, when the Torah tells us that he's 17, until he becomes the second to Paro when he's age 30, is a period of 13 years. Okay, that the Torah gives us those date markers in Yosef's life. So what does that mean? 13 years price to pay to become a ruler in Egypt for 80 years. Now, 13 years as a slave and as a prisoner, not great. But if that's the cost to become a ruler in Egypt for 80 years, I think most people might say, all right, it's worth it. Or maybe not worth it, but I'll take it. Okay? There's a very equitable balance in the end. But if you're dead, are you going to have those 80 years afterwards? No, of course not. And that's what Esther is trying to say. You know, Yosef was sold, but he had a light at the end of the tunnel. If we're dead, we'd much rather be sold. Okay, because there's a chance. If you're dead, there's no chance. Okay, so a number of motifs are clear. I think that is pretty well accepted in the group. I didn't say too many people going like, no way, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, so I think we're all on board with all this so far. Okay, good. Now we continue, and now I gave you the actual sources. So now we're going to look at Psukim, and we're going to see how the language is the same. It's the same. So I think that, yeah, by and large, it's the order of the Megillah, with a couple of exceptions towards the end. But now let's go through. If you hold on to where you are in the Megillah here, starting with chapter 2, which is 1253, okay, and you're able to turn back to the book of Bereishis, I'll try to give you the pages so you can follow along easily. Here we go. Page 226. So when Yosef appears before Paro and he tells Paro that he should, what he needs to do in order to save the food for the coming year, the years of plenty. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. So we're 6 lines from the bottom of the page. I have an extra chumash here if anybody needs. I just have one more over here. So it says here, Yosef says, Yaseh Paro, V'yafkeid pikidim al ha'aretz. V'yafkeid pikidim. You want the translation of V'yafkeid pikidim, 34? Let Paro proceed and let him appoint overseers on the land. Go back to Esther 2, 3, 4. Chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. So Vashti is gone, and Achashverosh's Na'arim, his servants are giving him a suggestion as to how he can find a new wife. Pasuk Gimel, V'yafkeid Hamelech Pikidim B'chol Medinos Malchuso. Exact same thing. You have to appoint Pikidim, overseers over this. They're going to gather all the maidens. They're going to bring them in, and you'll have a party each night. Achashverosh is going to enjoy, like Mel Brooks said. It's good to be the. Come on, folks. You never saw History of the World Part One. Say it. It's good to be the king, right? Okay. Not so good for all these ladies, but it's good to be the king. Okay. Next, we have Kibbutzim. Same exact language. If you now we'll just look at the next one in Esther. Turn the page in the Chumash. We have page 1254. So, when Esther is brought in, verse 12. So it's about 6, 7, 8 lines from the top. Uvehagia Tor Esther bas Avichail. I'm sorry. Uvagia Tor Na'arav Na'arav Lavo Lamelach Achashverosh Miketz Hayos La Kedas Anashim Shnei Masar Chodesh. Here's the key phrase: Ki Kain Yimleu Yimei Merukehen. So each girl would come in after having their 12 months rather preparation, 6 months with one kind of oil, 6 months with perfume and spices, whatever it is. I mean, this is a big production to spend one night with the king, but whatever. Okay, 2:12. Go to the end of the Yosef story, chapter 50, verse 3. And this is describing the way the mummification of Yaakov takes place. Page 284. Vayim le'u lo arba'im yom. Ki, here's the phrase. Ki, kein yim le'u yimei achanutim. Now, obviously, it's very different. One is girls being prepared to meet the king. And one is Yaakov's body being prepared for burial. Okay, in the Egyptian way, but the language is exactly the same. Ki kein yim le'u yimei, and then the different people who are doing what they're doing. Okay, go back to Megillas Esther, same page, at the very end of the page, page 1254. Vayomru avdei amelech. So this is in chapter 3. Haman has risen to power, and Mordechai is walking around, and every time he comes across Haman, or Haman's walking around, every time he passes Mordechai, Mordechai is not bowing down. I just turned the face. So Mordechai is being asked, why are you not following the law of the king? Now we have a tradition, it's talked about in the Gemara and various Midrashim, that one of the reasons why Mordechai was not, I mean there are several reasons why Mordechai was not bowing down to Haman, one of which is that Haman had sold himself as Mordechai's servant. Okay, that's one possibility. Another one is that Haman was wearing an idol, and Mordechai was not going to bow. Rule of the king. Listen, is there anything wrong with bowing down to a king or to an official of the king in Jewish law? No, there's nothing wrong. You're supposed to give kavod, honor to a king in the way which is proper. But if there's an idol there, so that's the story which we have in the Hanukkah story, Chana and her sons. That's the story with Daniel. It's the story with, that they didn't bow down when there was an idol. So take the idol away and I'll bow down to Mr. King. But in terms of if there's an idol, so this is the problem. By he, look at the language. Ki omrav elav yom vayom velo shema alehem. They're talking to him regarding this every single day. Every single day. That's the phrase that we're looking at. Go back to 39:10. This is about doing one of the cardinal sins. 39:10 is the story of Yosef and Mrs. Potiphar. Remember Mrs. Potiphar? Chapter 39, verse 10. Sorry, I didn't say the page number yet. It is page 214. Yeah. On the handout that I gave you, it says 39:10. So when you see numbers written in that way, that means chapter and verse. Okay, chapter and verse numbers. 39:10. Vayihi kedabira el Yosef yom yom velo shamai leha. She's speaking to him day in and day out. Yosef, remember the line from the musical? Come and lie with me, love, every single day. Now, I don't, I don't know about you, but if you're Yosef and you're living in a society and an environment when this kind of stuff happens all the time behind closed doors every single day, eventually you might cave. And Yosef does not. Unbelievable. It's happening all the time. You think Potiphar knew that his wife was bed romping? He knew. Okay? He absolutely knew. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest that Potiphar did not believe his wife, and he did believe Yosef, but he had to throw Yosef in prison for appearances, because if it's like in To Kill a Mockingbird, that's the example that I like to give, when it's the white person versus the black guy in the 20s in the South, then who's telling the truth? Obviously. And if it's the slave versus the master's wife in ancient Egypt, who's obviously telling the truth? Obviously. Okay. So there you go. And so in both cases, it's for a sin, and the language is being used to demonstrate it. Every single day this is a challenge, and yet, in Mordechai's case, he persevered, and yet, in Yosef's case, he persevered. We're still here in Bereishis, so let's just turn to the next one in Bereishis, which is chapter 43, verse 14. And it's on the bottom, page 240. The bottom of page 240. Okay? Yeah, it's the words at the end of the pasuk. Yosef says, "Ve'el Shaddai yiten lachem rachamim lefnei ha'ish, v'shilach lachem et tzachichem acher ve'es binyamin." You can go home. God's going to protect you. Va'ani kasher shacholti shacholti. Okay? Who's the speaker here? This is actually, this is Yisrael. This is Yisrael. In other words, this is what Yisrael is saying to the brothers as they're going to be taking Binyamin back down. In his case, for the first time, while they're going back down. So what's he saying? What's the last line? As for me, as I have been bereaved, so I am bereaved. If we were to follow the custom of the way that we read the Megillah for this, we might read this, Va'ani kasher shacholti shacholti. We don't do that when we're reading this passage in Bereishis. But what does Esther say when she describes to Mordechai what she's supposed to do? It's towards the end of chapter 4, back on page 1256, second to last verse in chapter 4. She says, we're not going to eat for 3 days, day and night. And even our Osiris again, I'm also going to fast with my girls. Uvechein avo l'melech asher lo chadas, v'chasher avadati, avadati. It's not the same word, obviously, shakalti, shakalti, avadati, avadati, but it's the same sentiment, for sure, and the same format of language. In other words, the kasher blank, blank, and that word is repeated. Okay, so that's what you have. So it's clearly a motif and a literary device for sure, which is being used to demonstrate that. Okay, we're in Esther, so let's turn to 8:6, which is on page 1259, towards the top of the page. Okay, and this is Esther's second request to the king. Esther's first request to the king was at the second party. Let me rephrase. Esther has three requests to the king. First one is, come to party number one. Second one is, four requests. Okay, come to party number one. That's in front of the king. At the party, come to party number two. Right? At the second party, save my people. Right? And what does the king do in response to save my people? Haman's dead. Yay! Yay? What's the problem with that? Haman's decree is still on the books. Okay? And so we know what ends up happening is, and the king says, you know, we can't undo laws. It's like in Aladdin. Remember the movie Aladdin when the sultan says, sorry, princess, you have to marry a prince. So Aladdin comes in and she realizes he's not really a prince, but she wants to marry him anyway. And the sultan says, well, am I sultan or am I sultan? And he changes the law. Achashverosh, are you king or are you king? Change the law. What's wrong with you? You can annul a decree. Achashverosh doesn't want to annul a decree because the law is the law. All right, whatever. That goes into the debate whether Achashverosh is an idiot or he's a smart guy. Okay, we'll leave that for a different conversation. But what happens in the end afterwards is that Mordechai is given the opportunity to write a counter law, and the Jews can fight back. And that's what ends up happening. But how does that happen? It happens because Esther makes her next request. And this is what she says. Bottom of page 1258 onto 1259. She says, she's saying, can you undo the law? Can you undo the law? And again, this is read in the Echatun. How can I bear to witness the disaster which is going to befall my people? How can I bear to witness the destruction of my relatives? Okay? What kind of plea? Who makes a similar plea to that in the Yosef story? Well, we just got a hint of it. Remember, there was a little bit of a premonition. What's going to happen to Binyamin in front of Yosef? Not knowing that it's Yosef. So who swears to defend Yosef? Yehuda. Well, Reuven tries, but Yaakov says, no, thank you. Yehuda does, and Yehuda, of course, is the one who's given that opportunity. So now let's go back. 44:34. Which is on page... Yehuda's speech in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. So it's page 252. Okay, Yehuda recounts to Yosef the entire story from his perspective of what has taken place. And now he's basically saying, look, I made a deal. We're going to go back to Pesukim, go back to 32. So it's page 252, second line from the top. Ki avdecha ravis hanar me'im avi lemor. I took responsibility for him. Im lo avi enu elecha. If I don't bring him back to you, meaning to Yaakov, v'chatasi le'avi kol ayamim. I'm sorry, no. Im lo avi enu elecha. That if I don't, no, I told my father, if I do not bring him back to you, to Yaakov, then v'chatasi le'avi kol ayamim, then I will have been, it's as if I've sinned to my father all my life. V'yata, yeah, and so now Yehuda is saying to Yosef, again, still not knowing that it's Yosef, Yeshev no avdechatach asanar, let your servant, meaning me, Yehuda, let me be the servant in Binyamin's place, Eved Ladoni, let me be the servant to our master, v'hanar ya'al emachav, and let the boy go back with his brothers. And here's a line which is parallel to what Esther said, ki eich e'elei alavi, how can I go up to my father, v'hanar in any way iti, pen erev arash she'im tzas ami, lest I see the bad that is going to find my father. Okay, and the question, and you see the way I put the question in the underneath the, where it says textual parallels. How can I continue? How can I continue in Esther's case? How can I face my people saying, look, they knew I was in a position to do something, and I didn't bring it to its conclusion? It's great that Haman's dead, but guess what? There are plenty of people who are still chomping at the bit because they want to kill the Jews, and they're going to do it. Unless you, king, can annul the decree. And the king says, I'm not going to do that, but here's the ring, which he proceeds to give to Mordechai. Okay? I mean, that's another one, by the way. I didn't give it to you in the text. But let's look at the last one that I gave you here, and then we'll just find the one about the ring, because that's also extremely clear. So here we're up to Rise. 42 to 43, so we're going to go back to the beginning of Parshas Miketz, 41, which is on page 228, and we see how when Yosef is elevated to this position of power, actually we'll look at that here, the one that I was going to talk about is here as well, so it's 42, I did give it to you. Okay, so... starting with Pasuk Membeis, 42. Vayasar Paro es tabato mi al yado. Paro removes his ring from his hand. Vayiteno son, he placed it al yad Yosef, on Yosef's hand. Vayalbesho so big deshesh, and he dressed him in these fancy clothes. Vayasam revid asahav, and he put the golden chain al saver on his neck. Vayar kevo so bin kevo samishne, and they rode him on this fancy horse. Vayikru ulufanav avrech, and they called him a koil guy. That's a joke. Vinasono so al kol eretz and shrine, they placed him over Egypt. And Vayomer Paro Yosef Ani Paro Ubiladecha Lo Yorim Ishes Yedov Esar Glob Chalaris Mitzrayim. Paro says, "I'm Paro, but other than you, there's nobody higher than you other than me." And they gave him a name, Tzavnas Panech, etc., and a wife. And Yosef's a pretty significant guy in Egypt. You go to the Megillah. So, firstly, I mean, I don't have to show you, but it's the exact same thing. I'll show you anyway. Look at when Achashverosh gives his ring to Haman. It's on page 1255, smack in the middle of the page, verse 10. 1255, so it's chapter 3, verse 10, for those who have your own book. So you see it's the exact same language that he removes his ring from his hand and he gives it to Haman. But let's take a look at the way Mordechai is treated in the two episodes in which Mordechai is elevated to a fancy position. Look on the bottom of page 1257, chapter 6, verse 9. And you'll see that Haman is describing what's going to happen to the person that the king wants to honor. This is what Haman is hoping to happen to himself. And he says, V'nasona levush v'yasus al yad ish b'sarei ha-melech apartamim l'bishu es ha-ish ha-shar-melech b'chavetz b'garo. You take the clothing and the horse, you put him in the hands of an officer of the king, and he'll get the guy dressed in that, v'yarkivu al asus b'rechov at-yir, and he'll ride him on a horse through town, v'karu l'fanav, and they'll call before him. Remember, in Yosef's case, they called in front of him, they called him Avrech. Whatever Avrech means, there's plenty of interpretations about that. But there's going to be a declaration about the fellow. And sure enough, what does he do? Go down to the last line of the page. Haman takes the clothing and the horse. He dresses Mordechai by Yakiveu Berchova Ir through the streets of the city. He does exactly what he's supposed to do. And remember, Haman had also said to put the king's crown on the fellow. And in Yosef's case, I don't know if they had crowns in Egypt. You know, they had a headdress. But Yosef wore a revit azahav, which is a golden chain around the neck. What's the other time when Mordechai is risen to power? Chapter 8, so it's the bottom, page 1258. When Esther introduces Mordechai to the king. Chapter 8, verse 2. Parakas pasuk beis by Yasser Hamelach as Tabato Asher Avirmi Haman by Itanal the Mordechai Batasim Esteres Mordechai al Beis Haman. The king removes his ring that he had taken from Haman and he gave it to Mordechai, and Esther places Mordechai over the house of Haman. Okay, so I think it's pretty clear that there are many parallels in theme, in motif, in the text of the Megillah. There are, I'm sure, a lot more, but. You know, I don't want to spend too much time driving the point home. I think it is pretty clear, and we've seen a lot. Whether it's enough, we've seen enough. Okay, that leaves us with one more, and that is that word that we saw before, nimkarnu. So, to the best of my knowledge, that word appears one more time in all of Tanakh. But it's with different vowels. Anybody want to guess where that is? Give me a wild guess in general where it is. In the story of Yosef. Go ahead, everybody. Where is it?
In the story of Yosef.
Ah, brilliant! How did you come to that conclusion? Okay, so sure enough, there it is. 37. Unbelievable, right? Go to 3737, which is page 200 and... That's not correct. Not 3737. I'll give you the exact language in a second. It should be 37, probably 27. Yeah, that's what it is. So that's my typo. 3727. Okay? 3727. Page 204. All right, this is now the story of the actual sale of Yosef. Okay, remember, what was the plan? Originally, the plan was the two brothers who are not identified in the text say, I'm saying it by heart, but it's on the previous page. They say, oh, here comes the dreamer, let's kill him. And Reuven says, we're not going to kill him. We're going to throw him in a pit, and we're going to figure it out. And Reuven has his plan, which he doesn't tell anybody, which never gets actualized, because by the time Reuben shows up to the pit to save Yosef, Yosef is gone. Okay? What happens after that is Yehuda steps up. So it's actually verse 26, page 204. Vayomer Yehuda Elachav, Yehuda says to his brothers, Ma betzakin arog esachinu v'chisinu esdamo. What do we gain out of killing our brother and covering up his blood? L'chu v'nim, there's the word, v'nim kerenu la'yishma elim. Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, Yadenu al Tivo, and our hand will not be on him, Ki achinu v'sareinuhu, because he is our brother and our flesh, Vayishma'u echav. Just a quick aside, I don't remember, I think it was Rabbi Sajagon who says, I think, but I don't quote me on that one, but who said that achinu v'sareinuhu refers to Ishmael. which is interesting because Yishmael are cousins, and they said, you know what? The best place to put him is in the hands of cousins, so they'll take care of him to make sure he gets to a destination. And Yishmaelim know what it means to be rejected from the family, so they'll help it happen. Interesting. But anyway, so this is what he says. V'nimkarenu l'Yishmaelim. Now, what ends up happening as a result of the nimkarenu? So, of course, Yosef ends up being sold. Okay, whether the brothers sell him or the Midianim sell him, the next pasuk is one of the most vague pasukim in Chumash, and that's the subject of a very interesting discussion surrounding who sells Yosef, which we're not going to look at now. But Yosef does get sold in the aftermath of that recommendation by Yehuda, and of course it's Yehuda who, in the end, needs to bring about the redemption of his suggestion here. And he does so, as we know, at the end of the story, when he takes charge of Binyamin, and when he, as we saw before, when he says to Yosef, take me instead of him. I'm willing to give up everything that is near and dear to me in my life so that I do not have to return to my father and say, you know, I tried, but what can I do? There's a king who's more powerful. So if you turn over the page which I gave you, you'll see the tail end of this class. Okay, when we look at the story of the Megillah, one of the fascinating components of the tale as it is presented to us is how the Bnei Yisrael are presented. And I use that word very specifically. When you look through the Torah, how are the children of Israel presented? I just gave it away. What are we referred to as? Bnei Yisrael, children of Israel. That's who we are. How are the Bnei Yisrael referred to while they're living in the land of Israel? Bnei Yisrael. At what point are they referred to as Yehudim? After the destruction of a place called Judea. That's what happens. Who lives in Judea? Two tribes, Yehuda and Binyamin. Well, Shimon also lived within the area of Yehuda, but they're, for whatever reason, not mentioned. I don't know why. But primarily, it's the area of Yehuda and the area of Binyamin which are in the kingdom of Judea. Isn't that fascinating? Yehuda protects Binyamin and becomes the forever after bond brother to Binyamin. Crazy, right? What about Yosef? Well, Yosef is in the northern kingdom, and you know the fate of the northern kingdom is just it's a big question mark, certainly in this time period. Who is Mordechai? Mordechai, if you go back in the Megillah, to the very, right, he's from the tribe of Binyamin, but look at the way Mordechai is introduced to us. Okay? It's on page 1253. It's the pasuk which is in bold. Ish Yehudi haya b'shushan abira ushma Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish ish Yemini. Who is this guy? He's a Yehudi who is also a Yemini. He's a Judean, because he comes from the kingdom of Judea, but he is of the tribe of Binyamin. When we look at the story of Yosef, there is no question that Yosef was looking out for Binyamin more than anything. One of the reasons why Yosef wanted Binyamin to come down was because he wanted to protect him from the brothers. That's the first goal. When he sees that the brothers are willing to give up everything for Binyamin, he realizes, you know what, maybe we can actually be reunited. But who's willing to do everything in order to save Binyamin? Yehuda. So that's important to remember. It's important to bear in mind. So when we look at this story, we see the confluence of Yehuda and Binyamin coming to the fore to save the Jewish people. Now, from Haman's perspective, what does he care who the Yehudim are? He calls them all Yehudim because that's what anti-Semites do. First they said Jew. And then finally we said, okay, Jew. Okay, but once upon a time, that was a disparaging comment. It's those Judeans. Hello, we're Yisrael. We're the people of Israel. What are you talking about? Why do you have to throw us into a particular sect or to a particular group and say that we're united by a land? You know, the funniest thing is that when people say, oh, the Jewish people don't have a connection to the land, Jew comes from Judea. Hello, okay. Whatever. We're not going to get into politics. But Yehuda equals Yehudim. Yehuda saves Binyamin after having sold Yosef, who in the kingdom of Judea. What are the people in this book of Esther doing? We know that the name of God does not appear in the Megillah. So on the one hand, we can say that through referencing the story of Yosef, what is one thing that is that Yosef makes clear in his story? He says with Potiphar, he says, God's helping me. In the prison, he says, God shows me. When he tells them the dreams, God helps me. To Paro, he says, God helps me. So much so that Paro says, have you ever seen a man so possessed with the presence of God? In a positive way. That's what Yosef does. So maybe the authors of the Megillah in saying, look, we're not going to put God in here for whatever reasons we have, but we're going to put God in here because we're pointing to another story and to another hero and to another episode where God plays an essential role. And through giving all those nods, what we're saying is we know who's really running the show. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is a thought which I saw Rabbi David Foreman shared in one of his classes in Aleph Beta, in which he makes this very, very simple and obvious, once you realize it, point. When we think about the position that Esther was in, right, what does Mordechai say to Esther towards the end of chapter 4? He says, Esther, you became the queen, clearly, it's clear to Mordechai, you became the queen for one reason. This is your moment. This is your opportunity. If you don't, the salvation for the Jews will come from somewhere else, but what a shame if you had the opportunity and you didn't do it. And what could Esther have done? Esther could have said, you know what, I'll fast, I'll come to the king and I'll ask him. And she got pretty far. She got pretty far. She said, can you undo the decree? No, I'm sorry, before she said, can you undo the decree? She says, had we only been sold into slavery, that would have been fine, but we've been written off to be killed. And Ahasuerus says, what? Who? What? Huh? Haman. Haman's dead. Okay, great. Mission accomplished. But was mission accomplished? No. Esther could have come back to Mordechai and said, you know what? I tried. I got Haman out of the picture, but what can I do? The king says the law is the law. But Esther used the word Nivkarnu because she's echoing the role that Yehuda played. Yehuda is the one who said, L'chu v'nim karenu v'yishmeilim, let's sell him. And what does Yehuda end up doing in the end? Yehuda says, I'm willing to give up everything. Even though I sold Yosef, and I have every right to say, you know what, I did everything to save Binyamin. And I'm even offering to save myself, to give myself up rather, in order to save Binyamin. And if Yosef says, no, I don't want you, I want Binyamin, Yehuda can come home to his father and say, look, I know I promised, I did everything, but the guy's a king. I can't. Yehuda lays everything on the line because he has such a turnaround from the Vinim Kerenu Leishmeilim. The way that he didn't protect Yosef is the way that he protects Binyamin. And this is Rabbi Foreman's point. When you have the opportunity to say, I could have, but what can I do is out of my hands, and you take it to the next level and you actually bring it to a salvation, that's what Yehuda does. That's what the Yehudi in the Megillah represents. The Yehuda who says, I could have said that I'm done and I, what can I do? It's over. But he says, no, I'm going to make it happen. And of course, we know the resolution because it happened to be Yosef. And Yosef says, all right, it's over. I'm Yosef. Great, we're all saved. Happiness for the Jewish people for as long as Yosef is alive and beyond. They're in Egypt for 210 years. How many of those years are slavery? Not the first 100. Because Yosef and the brothers, they leave a good place for the Jewish people, relatively. Then slavery, of course, happens afterwards. But that is after they're all gone and buried. And Esther could have done the same thing. Esther could have said, hey, listen, how far do you want me to go? I put my life on the line in coming before the king. I got Haman killed. What else do you want me to do? And Esther comes back to the king, pleading, and says, I can't let it sit at that. There's something else that needs to be done. And because Esther made that additional request, that additional push, following in the lines of what Yehuda did, she brought about the salvation which we celebrate Ad Hayom Hazeh until today on Purim. And so I think that it's a beautiful imagery of what the Megillah tells us, but I think it's also very important, an important lesson for Jews of all time, that when we need to take a stand for something which is important for the salvation of the Jewish people, then we really owe it to ourselves to do that, because nobody else is looking out for us. And that, I think, more than anything, is the message of the Megillah, that it's the Bnei Yisrael, the Yehudim, when they are united, they can achieve amazing things. But when we are divided, unfortunately, that's how Churban comes about, and that's what could have happened. But Esther and Mordechai rallied the troops to bring about the salvation that we celebrate until today. Mm-hmm.